You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. I love sharing missionary stories, and we get to do that today here on Faith and Family. An exciting story of two missionaries serving the Lord in Africa, and I can't wait to share their stories with you. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Today, we are heading to Eastern and Southern Africa to meet two missionaries via Skype. First, joining us today, Sarah Kanoy. She's an RN, a community health nurse and educator for East Africa for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Sarah, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you.
Such a joy to have this opportunity to speak with you and share your story with our listeners today. Also joining us by Skype, Shara Cunningham. She's the area volunteer coordinator for Eastern and Southern Africa. Shara, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear both of your stories, where you come from and what brought you to where you are serving the Lord today. Shara, let's start with you. Where are you originally from? Where did you grow up?
I'm from the Caribbean. I was born on the island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, near Barbados, near St. Lucia. And then my family moved to the U.S. Virgin Islands. So I grew up as well on the islands of St. Croix and St. Thomas.
And when did you start thinking about becoming a missionary? When did the idea of becoming a missionary cross your mind?
Not till very, very late in life. Actually, about maybe 10 years ago. Before that, I always wanted to be a doctor. So I always had a strong desire to help people, and not one from a missionary standpoint. And I had never met a missionary growing up in the Caribbean, in the areas that I came from. Never had the opportunity to meet a missionary or hear from a missionary. So that wasn't particularly in my radar. But probably about 10 years ago, I heard a ministry moment at my home congregation in Phoenix, Christ Church Lutheran, and just kind of felt moved to want to be a part of that. And so prayed about it. And the Lord said, yeah, you should go on this mission trip. And that kind of sparked it up. So I think the Lord, in his own timing, he was the one that kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, okay, I kind of think I want you to be a missionary or start thinking about missions.
And what was your occupation at the time when that idea came to you, when the Lord provided this possibility of becoming a missionary?
Certified pharmacy technician.
Aha. And was it a vocation that you were content in, you were happy in?
Honestly, no. I was just kind of thinking about doing something else, but always pray that the Lord, he would guide me in where he needed me to be. So I was just kind of going through the motions, going to work, doing my job, but didn't think that long term that's where I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, let's talk about where you're from. Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in the Kansas City, Missouri area, but when I was two, my dad changed careers from being an architect to going to seminary in St. Louis to become a pastor. So I moved around quite a bit growing up, but the majority of my life I've lived in Nebraska.
And when did you think about becoming a missionary?
Well, I guess my story is a little bit opposite of Shara's in that for me, the inspiration came as a very young child. I remember a missionary coming to speak at our church when I was probably 8 years old, I think. And I remember going home from that presentation and telling my mom, like, Mom, when I grow up, I want to be a missionary. And I'm pretty sure she was like, okay, well, last week you watched the movie Free Willy and you wanted to be a whale trainer. So we'll see what next week holds. But that's kind of the start of the inspiration. And then it's just kind of continued through other opportunities I've had to be involved in missions.
So as your parents take in stride this newfound desire for a vocation that as many young children, as you pointed out with the example of, I saw this in a movie, and so that's what you wanted to do last week. Did they encourage and nurture this desire to become a missionary along the way?
Oh, I mean, they've always encouraged me that we need to live our lives for the Lord, and the greatest things we can do is to love God and love others, and whatever that looks like, if it's through being a nurse in the hospital or a teacher or whatever that looked like, they were encouraging that in me. And of course, that continued to encourage me to get involved with missions, because it allows me to love God and love others in a very real way every day.
As you started your education to become a nurse, was this really in the idea of being a missionary, was that in the foreground as you were going through your training?
I was definitely interested. It was maybe more in the back of my mind, but mm-hmm. I picked a nursing program that had an option to do a course in Tanzania between my sophomore and junior year of college. I spent 3 weeks traveling around and really learning about the healthcare and learning about East African culture. And so that was part of the reason I picked that nursing program. And then as I went through that, I was like, I love this. This is what I want to be a part of, like, long term.
As you mentioned, having this opportunity to travel and visit Tanzania as part of your nursing program, your nursing education, what did you see in the culture as you visited there? What did you see in the people? What did you learn when you were visiting?
The best way I guess I can describe it, and it may not make total sense to people who have not experienced it, but I feel like when I come to East Africa, I come home, because what I see in this culture is more like the person that I am. It's a culture that's focused on relationships above everything else, on putting aside your watch and forgetting about what time it is to focus on the relationship and building that. And the more time I spend in that culture, the more I feel at home.
Can you give an example of that? I've heard that from many people who have visited Eastern Africa. What would be an example of that?
Oh, I suppose, for example, if you had an arrangement that, say, I was going to go, maybe Shar and I were going to get together and we were going to have dinner, but I was visiting with someone in my home and they stayed later than I expected. Maybe we visited for an hour longer than I expected. The understanding is that the relationship matters more than anything. So me taking the time to visit with my visitor matters more than looking at my watch and saying, okay, I have to go because I'm supposed to meet Shara. Shara knows that if I'm late, there's something that came up and it's important. And Shara's relationship with me is important enough that she'll wait. As long as it takes, she'll wait. And then when we can get together and connect, we will.
Shara, when you experienced this cultural difference, what was it like for you? Was it something that was easy to adapt to, or did it take a while to adapt to this cultural difference?
I would also agree with Sarah. My first exposure to Africa was a mission trip to Uganda and Rwanda and then South Africa. And again, it's very evident that they're a very relational culture. And again, I always took the time during my mission trips to spend time getting to know people, to sitting with people, visiting with people in their homes. And I actually started my service with the LCMS as a geo missionary. So in South Africa, it literally took me 6 months to really get to know the people in the village that I worked in. So I would visit with them, sit with them, even if I didn't understand the language. But it took me taking the time to form those relationships that really made all of the difference in my service in working in that village every day. It's, again, relationships are very, very key. And no matter what our ministries are, it's very important that we take the time to develop relationships with the people that we're working with.
Tell me, Shara, tell me about your work as the area volunteer coordinator. What are some of your key duties?
I work in several different countries. Our area covers about maybe 10 different countries in Eastern and Southern Africa. And I work mainly with helping to support our local church relationships by encouraging volunteers to come and work in different areas and different ministries throughout the different countries that we're working. I work with our short-term teams and volunteers. So working with our local church partners and relationships to see where needs are for volunteers and short-term teams, being on the ground, putting all the logistics together, being with the teams when they're on the ground until they leave. And I also supervise our geo missionaries, which they serve sometimes for 1 to 2 years. So my workload is a little bit busy, but very rewarding.
How have you adapted to life in Eastern? You live in East Africa, is that right?
Yes, I also live in Nairobi.
And so how long have you lived in Nairobi?
I'm going on 4 years now.
And moving there, aside from the other cultural differences that we talked about earlier, have you adjusted to life in Nairobi pretty easily?
It takes time, but yes, I can say that I call Kenya home as well. I think that's important part of missionary life. Again, adapting to the culture enough that you can say that you're home. It is challenging at times navigating the cultural differences, trying to find where to shop, where to, you know, have a social life and just, you know, everyday things. And it comes in time, you know, at a comfortable pace where you can say, I'm at home. In the beginning, not so much because you stand out, you don't know where anything is. Again, the language is different, people think differently, but I will say Nairobi is my home.
Sarah, how about you? Other things other than that big cultural difference of time versus relationship, other things that you've learned as you've adjusted to life? How long have you been in Nairobi?
I moved to Nairobi in January of this year, and I was here for about 10 days before I left for Tanzania for 3 months of Kiswahili language school, and then returned to Nairobi to find a place to live. So I've really been living in Nairobi since about May of this year, and my work takes me outside of Nairobi a lot, so I'm sometimes as gone as much as I am home. But I've been here long enough to adjust to some things. We talked about the culture of time versus relationship. I think one of the biggest things to me, I'm from small town America, and Nairobi is not small town America. Nairobi is gigantic. So learning how to drive in a city of multi-million with potholes all over the place and push carts and bicycles and cars that don't drive with their lights on at night. I know for me, like, driving and transport was really stressful at first, and I've really adjusted a lot to that. Also, everyone lives behind gates and walls for security purposes. And when you're from small town America, that's just not the life. You know, I'm very used to waving at my neighbors from across the street and things like that. So that's been a big adjustment for me.
You mentioned language training. How many languages, what are the languages that are spoken in the community where you live?
That's a cool question. There's a lot of languages spoken here. In Kenya, the national languages are both English and Swahili. You'll hear both of those a lot. You'll also hear a lot of what's called Shang, which is the combination of English and Swahili words. Sometimes it's very recognizable. Sometimes by combining the two different words, even though you know the English word and you know the Swahili word, they combine it in such a way that you have no idea what they just said. So that seems like a language of its own. And then all of the different tribes and people groups will have their own local language as well that people will speak. In Kenya, there are
45
tribes. Okay. So walking around Nairobi, you can hear a lot of different languages. Although I would say English is very widely spoken in Nairobi.
So English is somewhat of a common language, but there are at least 45 different languages.
Yeah.
What are, Sarah, I don't think we've talked about your day-to-day work. You said you travel somewhat. Tell me about your work as community health nurse and educator.
Well, I told you I just came in January. So for the first year on the field as a career missionary, a lot of your responsibility is learning focused. It's a big learning curve. We talked about language, different culture, community, even the simple things of learning how to live in a foreign country, learning how to filter your water or wash your vegetables differently, or how do I get to the grocery store and back safely, or where am I going to buy this or that? So that's part of it, is to just learn how to live here. Another part is just to learn the communities and the areas that I'm going to be serving. So for this last year, most of my work has focused on getting out of Nairobi into any community setting that I can, into the villages to really learn more from the people. I've spent some time in hospitals and clinics learning about their healthcare system. I've worked with Shara a lot with our Mercy medical teams that come, and spent a lot of time on language, anything that can take me into an area that Swahili is spoken fluently is really, really good for my Swahili learning. So
Shara, have you also had language training in Swahili?
Yes. As Sarah said, she had 3 months. I also had initially about 6 weeks and then a tutor. So I had about a year straight of language learning, again, while trying to adapt to my work and getting out into communities, hosting teams as well. And part of that language learning is, again, tuning your ear to recognizing Swahili. It was very, very foreign to me. I had no idea that Swahili existed before I came to Kenya. And so I spent a lot of time, again, listening and hearing hearing it being spoken in from different people, from different people groups. And again, like Sarah said, we go into villages that maybe are Maasai and all they speak is Maasai, or we go to Turkana and all we hear is Turkana. And so your Swahili doesn't really help you, but most of the times we're with people from the church that speak English and can translate for us. But language learning is very key to part of our missionary life. Even just once you're comfortable with it, just going to the market, saying hello, saying goodbye, saying how are you. Those things mean a lot. It means that you're starting to understand the culture. Again, being in relationship with people, and people are very happy, even at the very basic level, if we speak Swahili to them. So it's very key in us, in our work and in our lives here in Nairobi.
How have you been received? How have you been welcomed by people in the community as you share with them what your work is, what you're there to do, how you're there to serve? Shara?
I would say we're very welcome with open arms. The Kenyans are very welcoming, very hospitable. And I think even from the standpoint of the Lutheran Church and the work that we do, we're always very well received. People take the time to get to know us, visit with us, I mean, show us into the communities. And it's something that I love doing. I mean, we go very, very deep into the bush in some remote locations. And I love the opportunity to do that. But we are very well received with all the ministries that we have from all of our different missionaries serving here. But I would say that, yes, it's overwhelming of the warmth and the welcome that we get in the communities that we serve in.
Sarah, anything to add to that?
I think just because I have the perspective of someone who just came on the field in the last year, I can say that it's not just like the local church who's really welcomed me, but even my fellow missionaries have done a really good job of helping me get settled and feel comfortable. And being a single person living in a foreign country brings its own challenges. But for me to feel like I have my own family here in my fellow missionaries has been a huge blessing as well.
You mentioned, I think, Shara, you mentioned, you know, visiting in the community or saying hello and goodbye, greetings, things like that in the community or going to the store. I think you both have mentioned that, venturing into the city and shopping and things like that, how you go about that. What would you say are some of the things that were different or it took a little while to get used to, some of the cultures of shopping? You know, I'm thinking of where I live here in the United States. I have a grocery store within walking distance, and I can go to the grocery store just about any time. It's not open 24 hours, but pretty close. So I can, you know, run to the grocery store at 9, 10 o'clock at night if I need to for something last minute. And I've grown quite comfortable with that. How do you go about things like grocery shopping? And you both, I think, mentioned something about learning how to go about shopping and getting what you need. We'll start with Shara.
Yes, that was a big challenge. And when I first came up to Nairobi, I I was staying in another part of town at the time, and it wasn't very close to a grocery store, so I would have to get on the local matatus or minibus that most Kenyans use to get to the grocery store, and then have to figure out how much I could carry to get back on the matatu to get home. And not all of them are open 24 hours. Some are closed maybe at 8 or 9 on the weekends. And having to figure that out. Furniture shopping, that's a whole nother animal. we don't have Ashley Furniture or Super Walmart that we are very used to. There is a section of town that local furniture makers sell furniture. So you have to go, you have to try and barter a good price, and being expatriates, we don't get the local price, so we have to barter for a good price. You have to try and explain exactly what you want. And, you know, with the language barrier, it's difficult. And sometimes you don't always get what you want. And you go back and forth. And it's this exchange of, you know, pleasantries and sometimes unpleasantries. But we, most of us have gone to what we call Furniture Row to get furniture made. Now we figured out that there are some furniture stores that we can just go and buy a regular couch or better things like that. But the prices are more expensive. So you have to weigh, am I going to pay 3 times the cost, or am I going to pay, you know, something reasonable on Furniture Row, but is it worth the hassle of trying to barter a good price and trying to explain to somebody exactly what you want, what color stain, what dimensions, you know, only to have it not turn out the way that you want it to be. So those are some of the hassles of, again, just getting furniture, even for curtains. I just didn't go to a Walmart and buy curtain panels. I had to have somebody come to my house, measure the windows, the height and the width. And I had to go to a fabric store to pick out fabric, which is something I never did before. I have somebody make the curtains and come and hang them and all of that. And that was actually very stressful for me because, again, you go to Walmart or Target, you buy a couple of panels in a pack in a color that you like and that you want, not just what you have to exist. And, you know, 10, 20 minutes, it's done. But this is an ordeal. It takes a couple of weeks before you kind of get things to where you want it to be.
Sarah, how about you? How has shopping been an experience for you?
I guess I think probably what was the most overwhelming for me was when I moved into my home. I picked out a place to live, and here it was an unfurnished place, which is different here in Kenya. That means no refrigerator, no, you know, stove, no washing machine. Literally, I walked in my house and had nothing other than the 3 suitcases that I came from the States with. So that's overwhelming to figure out. You know, in the States, I had never bought a washing machine. I had never bought a stove or refrigerator. I'd never bought brand new living room furniture. I'd always had like Goodwill or hand-me-down from grandma and grandpa or from parents or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was very overwhelming to think, okay, what do I need to survive to start with? And how do I get that in my house so I can start living there? And then like slowly over time, yeah, Shara mentioned going to the side of the road to barter with somebody in half Swahili, half English, to try to buy, you know, a bed frame or a coffee table or whatever it is that you're looking for. So there's that kind of style of shopping where you're bartering with somebody on the side of the road. That's very common. The other kind of shopping here in Nairobi, we are fortunate to have like shopping centers and malls. And a lot of our bigger grocery stores are there. So you can go to a grocery store. It's not simple. When you get to the mall, you have to stop your vehicle outside and they will look throughout your vehicle and do a security check. Then you'll have to take a parking ticket to go into the mall. You find a place to park. And when you go to walk into the mall, you have to go through personal security as well. They'll check for anything dangerous. Then you will go into the store and shop for the things, which is an adventure when you're new and you think, I just want some ground beef, but you don't know that what you need to ask for is mincemeat. or I don't know, another example of things like that that you buy on a regular basis in the States and you've never thought another thing of it. And then you come here and you're like, I have no idea what this is. I don't know if I want it or not. So it's an adventure. So then you wait in a really long line to pay for your things, and sometimes a really long line, I guess. Yes. And then reverse the process of having to go back out and pay for your parking and go through the security gates and drive the crazy roads home. So it's just an adjustment, and over time it happens, but it definitely takes time.
So something that might take maybe 20 minutes, 40 minutes here in the United States, how long does it take you typically to go to the grocery store and get, you know, four or five items or maybe more?
Yeah, I used to like be able to pop into Walmart or Hy-Vee or something. And as a single person, if I didn't have much, like, I'd be in and out and leaving within 20 to 30 minutes. You can't do that. I mean, it's an hour at least usually. For example, a couple weeks ago, I wasn't feeling very well and I went to the grocery store and I just wanted like a can of soup, just something simple when you have a sore throat, bad cold. And I stood in the grocery store aisle and I am a little bit ashamed of it. I started tearing up a little bit because I couldn't even find a can of soup. Like, mm-hmm. could not find anything remotely recognizable, and left the grocery store empty handed. And it still took me 45 minutes to go in and not buy anything and then leave. So
it's certainly different than what you grew up with, but it sounds like something that you perhaps have to plan for, prepare for a little bit more than, which is probably, in terms of household economics, probably a better choice. When you make a shopping trip, it's a little bit more of a planned trip, whereas in the United States, sometimes we've fallen into this bad habit of just going to the store and seeing what we find and then coming home perhaps with more than what we need. Well, it sounds like you've been adjusting well. You both have learned quite a bit about the culture and the life there. When I come back, we need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll learn more about your work with the Mercy Medical Teams and how the Lord is using others, you and others, to bring the good news of Jesus and works of mercy to those in Eastern and Southern Africa. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The Centers for Disease Control have confirmed your right to encourage your children to save sex for marriage. Their recent study looked at high school students and found those who engaged in physical relationships with the opposite sex reported having unhealthy behaviors. Those who engaged in encounters with the same sex or both reported the least healthy behaviors of all. Those who participated in sex outside of marriage were more likely to be involved with 18 violence-related risk behaviors. The researchers found the same was true with use of tobacco, drugs, and alcohol. Even so, many government-funded entities continue to outright mock abstinence education. Parents, your children are too precious to give in to pressure. Keep teaching abstinence.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Are you a rostered church worker with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? As a financial partner with the LCMS, we understand your unique calling and desire to stay focused on ministry, which is why you can look to us as a faithful partner when it comes to your financial needs. Our borrowing solutions allow Rosted Church workers and ministries to expand their spiritual work now and in the future. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
Concordia University, Wisconsin, in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org. Listen anywhere in the world on your computer and laptops. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are talking with missionary Sarah Kanoy. She's a community health nurse and educator in East Africa. And Shara Cunningham. She's the area volunteer coordinator for Southern Africa, Eastern and Southern Africa, and both serving with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And before we went to break, had a great opportunity to learn about your life, adjusting to life in Eastern and Southern Africa as missionaries, and all the great experiences that you've had as you learn and adjust to this life. One of the things that you get to do in your work is work with Mercy Medical Teams. Shara, tell me a little bit about your work with the Mercy Medical Teams that come to Eastern and Southern Africa.
Well, a lot of my work is, again, organizing for the Mercy Medical Teams in Eastern and Southern Africa, particularly in Kenya, in Tanzania, and now Uganda. So I will work with our local partner churches to let them know that we will have a team coming at a particular time. And they're the ones that identify the areas that our teams will serve in. So once that's been determined, I will travel to that area, meet with the local pastors, evangelists, and people, church elders on the ground to explain what the team will come to do and how we can go about preparing for the logistics, looking at an area that has a church building or a school for a location for the team. It involves talking with community chiefs or elders to grant us permission to have the team serve in that area, looking at ways to advertise to get the word out for people to know that the team will be coming, meeting with the local Ministry of Health people to organize for Kenyan medical personnel to work alongside of us, and also to organize with the church local evangelists, pastors, volunteers from the church that will serve alongside of us. So it takes quite a bit of legwork and preparation from our end to even put together the logistics for a team to come to Kenya or Tanzania or Uganda.
And Sarah, what is your work with the Mercy Medical Teams as they arrive?
Yeah, my work is primarily to partner with Shara in the preparations as I can, and then especially when the teams are here, I'm the person who's more familiar with how medicine is practiced here as compared to the States. So I kind of, like Shara, I get to be the go-between between the American team and the Kenyan or Ugandan or Tanzanian team of healthcare workers that help us run our camps. So I kind of try to help those two teams work with one another smoothly, help them understand each other's culture and the way that we do things maybe a little bit differently. For me, it's a lot more about the actual medicine of whether that's giving IV shots or fluids or dressing changes or listening to a patient explain what's going on or following up later. I see you saw the doctor and we couldn't help you here. Do we need to try to get you to a hospital somewhere else at some point to see if they can help you, and continuing to follow up with them and making sure that the people are receiving the appropriate care, and making sure that care is always comes with the proclamation of the gospel.
What are the needs in the communities where these Mercy Medical Teams are serving? What are some of the needs that are being addressed by these Mercy Medical Teams?
Well, most of our Mercy Medical team serve in areas that are underserved as far as medical services. And I'll talk a little bit about Uganda. Our first team in Uganda last year, we were in an area in the north, and we saw about 2,500 people in a week. And it was overwhelming that every morning when we would get there, there were at least 500 or 600 people already waiting. And many people had walked quite a far distance to even come. And during the time that I was there, there was a shortage of medicines at the local hospitals. And I mean, we gave out so much medication because people, it just wasn't available. And it was very far for people to even walk to the nearest dispensary or to get to the local hospital. So we tend to take these medical services with the American Mercy Medical team members, with the local medical providers into areas where it's very difficult for people to have access to medical services. But I think the key, I think Sarah mentioned this, that gospel proclamation is part of all of our Mercy Medical teams. We work with the local church, and on the ground, they have local pastors and evangelists that share the gospel message with everybody that comes, whether it's through individual prayers for people. Sometimes the pastors are in an area where people can sit with them and talk about specific prayer needs, or in a group setting where we have an evangelism tent where smaller groups at a time, pastors are able to share the gospel message. And the pastors are there to also pray with people during the clinic for special needs that come up. So that is also an opportunity to put the face of the local Lutheran church out there to the people that may not know that the Lutheran church is in their area. It gives the church an opportunity for outreach as well. So again, we tend to take the teams to where those services are not readily available.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you been involved with a Mercy Medical team prior to your service here in Eastern and Southern Africa?
No.
No, I had not.
Had you even heard of these Mercy Medical teams before?
No.
Say that I had.
And now you're on the ground as some of the team that helps welcome and supports these Mercy Medical teams as they come in. What are some of the day-to-day things that these Mercy Medical teams do, that the volunteers who come on these teams, what are some of the day-to-day things you see them doing or that you help them do? I know you mentioned sometimes part of their job is connecting the visitors to the camps or the clinics to the local church. What are some other things that these Mercy Medical volunteers do when they're there?
Well, Sarah and I are also with our teams on the ground, so we were actively participating in the clinic as well. With my background in pharmacy, I usually end up in that area. But one of the things that we find that's very important too is to take time to get into the community. Our recent team, we had the opportunity to take the team into the Maasai villages, into their homesteads, to see a little bit more on the ground of how the Maasai people live, because we were serving the Maasai people. So I think that's important as well, to be able to get into the community, see how that particular people group lives and exists, visiting with those families, praying with those families. But our teams do a lot of different things. It's a full-out medical clinic in where we have people taking vital signs, nurses and doctors doing consultation and screening. Sarah participates in trauma things, wound care, giving shots, giving IVs, any emergency situations that come up. We sometimes have nutritionists. We have people that do immunizations. I work in the pharmacy. So it's a full service medical clinic from, again, somebody just walking up that didn't know that it existed. I mean, somebody comes, they hear the gospel, they get their vitals, they see the doctor, and they get their medicines on the other end, and then they go home.
How do you get the word out to the people in the community that these services, this camp or this clinic is being set up for a time? How do you get the word out to those in the community so that they know that this is made available to them?
A lot of times it's working with the local pastors and evangelists, the local church on the ground. And again, meeting with the church elders, meeting with the community elders as well. So they themselves will take the word out into their communities. A lot of the times the pastors, they will go into the local markets on several days, different days of the week in villages. You will have a market day where people will come and sell different things, vegetables, clothing, cows, goats, chickens. And it's a time where a mass amount of people are gathered together to buy and sell different things. So they go to those market days and they will say that a clinic is coming. And even during the week of the clinic, there's a market day. So they will also go on that particular day. But a lot of people don't believe that these services are free, hearing it ahead of time. So usually after the first day, all of the people that come on the first day will go back. When they go back home, they will say, yeah, this clinic really is free. You can go there and people will help you. And so just the word of mouth from the people themselves that had come through the clinic is very instrumental in having more people come for the following days.
Sarah, part of your title includes educator, community health nurse and educator. Tell me about some, I gather that means that you're doing some health education. Tell me about that aspect of your work.
Yeah, the more MMTs I've been involved in, the more I see the need for that, because there's many things that we see at these teams that are preventable diseases that we need to get the education out to the people. Rather than treating the pain and the suffering later, let's just prevent it to start with. So moving forward, I said this first year is a year of learning, but moving forward, especially as I continue to grow in my abilities with Swahili, my job will be to get out into the local communities with the churches or schools or maybe our Project 24 sites with the LCMS and the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Kenya to go to these places and to provide health education. That could be really simple things like the importance of hand washing, or it could be things that we take for granted in the States. For example, a lot of women here don't even understand how their body works, just the anatomy and physiology and life cycle of a woman's body. So going out and taking the time to teach about that is pretty important as well.
You both have mentioned working with the local church. Tell me about learning, meeting, and interacting with the local church. We'll start with Sarah, and then we'll go to Shara. Sarah, what's been your involvement with the local church?
It's been really an awesome opportunity for me. I find the people of the local church are very welcoming, and they're excited to work with us. I think, like Shara said, one of our jobs being here working alongside them is just to do life together, and we can kind of encourage one another through that. So I find working with the local church workers to be a huge blessing. It's an opportunity for me to build relationships with people who help me understand the culture and help me practice my language more. So for example, like at our Mercy Medical teams, whatever church is hosting the team, their church pastor will be there, and likely there'll be maybe another pastor from the area, or maybe the bishop, or some several church volunteers that we'll work with. We tend to have somewhere between 3 and 5 ladies from the congregation that will be responsible for cooking meals for the team throughout the week, which I really enjoyed at this last one. It was the same 5 or 6 ladies. It was a little more than normal, but they came daily and spent all day long. You know, they'd prepare tea in the morning for us, and then they would prepare lunch and cleaning up after us and such. But the social interaction that these ladies were having, you could tell it was like, it reminded me of my church back home and all the ladies who get together for LWML events and work in the kitchen together, and the relationships that they get to have with one another and encouraging one another. And then that our team got to be a part of that too, and seeing these ladies serving them.
And it sounds like it was a joy for them to serve, as you describe it. It sounds like something that they really enjoy.
It seemed to me that it was as much a blessing to them to be with us through that week as it was for us to have them.
Shara, the local church that we're speaking of is the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Kenya. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell me about how you've connected with the local church since you've been there, and what it's been like coming from you know, your church in Phoenix to now the local church, and how you've grown in relationships with them and gathered together to worship with them.
Yes, I am. I feel very much part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Kenya, especially at our the cathedral that we worship on a regular basis. Anytime I'm away and I come back, they always say our sister has returned, you know, greet the church. But I work also a lot with the leadership of the church. Again, in my role as volunteer coordinator, again, having conversations with them about, again, the need for volunteers or for short-term teams and in ways to support the work of the church in different areas. So I have a very good relationship with a lot of the bishops. I've traveled to all of the dioceses. I've met the leadership in their areas. I've been to a lot of congregations. And I enjoy the pastors and the evangelists and the people on the ground as well too. And I think you get to see the heartbeat of the communities from that level as well. Whenever I travel around, especially on multiple trips, I'm always very welcomed. And I feel very much in community with all of the local church people that I've met. So I will say that my relationship is really good. And again, and that's very, very key. When you can feel like a part of, you know, the partner church that you're working with, it helps to support the growth of the church, as we walk alongside them, that we can encourage them and they also encourage us and teach us about, a lot of the culture and traditions, here in the country. So I will echo Sarah in saying that, yeah, we feel very welcomed and we have a good, working relationship and personal relationship with the church here.
How has the work of Mercy Medical Teams supported the long-term work, the mission of the local church and your mission there as well? How do the Mercy Medical Teams support that work that you're given to do and the work of the local church in more of a big picture or long-term perspective? Shara?
I will say, the Mercy Medical Teams are obviously helping the areas of Mercy, but I think what they do for helping us to support the work of the church is, helping them in the area of outreach. Some of the congregations are smaller congregations, and you may have one pastor, for about 10 or 15 churches, and he doesn't have the mobility to reach all those congregations. So when a Mercy Medical Team comes, people may not know that there was a Lutheran church because some of the churches are small. But when a Mercy Medical Team comes, everybody in the community near and far come, and they're able to see the face of the Lutheran church. The pastors are there on the ground. People can see the local pastors themselves. They can hear from them. They get to meet them. And actually, just in June, we were in an area in the very north of Kenya in Turkana. And I think out of that Mercy Medical Team, we had a small Lutheran congregation start as a result of our Mercy Medical Team in June. And we're going to be doing more mission work in that area with a mission station with a local Lutheran pastor as well. So it helps with getting people into the churches, people knowledge of the Lutheran church that didn't know that the Lutheran church was there to begin with. So I think it goes hand in hand in helping to support the church in their areas of outreach and working together to support them in that way.
Thanks be to God for that work as the Holy Spirit works in that ministry of that mercy work and bringing the good news of Jesus to those people, and that a new congregation has come out of that. What would you say to folks back here in the States who might be thinking about serving on a Mercy Medical Team? What do they need to know? How might they prepare? What could they look forward to if coming to serve on a Mercy Medical Team? We'll start with Sarah and then we'll go to Shara.
I think the most important thing is for people to realize that it doesn't take special talents or abilities, that there's so many different ways to serve on the team. Like there's the people taking vital signs or working in the evangelism tent, working in the pharmacy. There's so many different areas to work. You don't need to be a nurse. You don't need to be a doctor. We love having nurses and doctors, but we also love having We had an awesome flight attendant in Uganda that helped, or just people of all different backgrounds, teachers. It really doesn't matter what your background is. There is a way and there is a place for you to serve if that's what you're feeling called to. I think the other important thing, and it's a tough thing, but to consider is just the concept of flexibility. When you come, you have to be ready and willing to do whatever is placed before you. For example, our team in June, right about the time the team was actually leaving the United States, Shar and I found out that there was a countrywide ban on foreign-led medical camps. And this was my first experience with an MMT at all. And I remember feeling pretty panicky about that. Like, well, they're already on the way. What are we going to do? And Shara just continued to encourage me to trust in God. And with a lot of prayers and God giving us some connections to some people, we were able to get to permission for the team to continue. But it was really neat to, when the team arrived in Kenya, we told them, this is the situation. We don't even know if we can do this. And every person on that team said, that's okay. We're here to serve. Whatever that means, we're here to do it. And that was really awesome to see their willingness and flexibility to show the love of Christ to the people of Kenya in whatever manner that looked like, whether it was medical or not.
Shara, what would you have to add to that? Anything to add to that when thinking about, for those of us here in the United States who might be thinking about coming to serve on a Mercy medical team?
Again, I echo Sarah in saying it, you don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be a nurse. You just have to come with a willingness to serve and the love of Christ in your heart to share with the people in Kenya or wherever you choose to do a Mercy medical team, being flexible, being willing to learn about another culture, another people, and willing to be in relationship. I think most people that walk away from this, or once they've done it, you know, will say that it was really good getting to know a local Kenyan. I've met doctors that work with their Kenyan counterparts, and in the beginning, they don't know if they're going to be able to add to what that person knows, but they come away feeling that, you know, we've learned so much and we've shared so much. So I always tell them, take away the relationship. When you're here, share about your life and who you are. Ask the Kenyan or the Ugandan or a Tanzanian about who they are. Talk about your children, talk about your life. You know, again, be in that relationship. And I think they come away with again, you know, having friends from the people that they work with. So I think also being a good Christian witness, and again, and just, you know, in the simple touch of a hand to a patient that might be scared because they're going to get an injection, but having the love of Christ. And I think people will say, well, we don't know why we come. And it's the Lord's calling on each individual person, not Sarah, not I. We don't ask anybody to come. It's God that touches each and every person that comes. And, you know, some people are scared because they're going to a foreign country for the first time. But I say, again, trust the Lord and his calling on your heart to be a part of a Mercy medical team, and trust that he is with you, and trust that he has a plan for you in being on a Mercy medical team. But again, being open to learning, being flexible, and being in relationship.
My guest today, Shara Cunningham, missionary and area volunteer coordinator to Eastern and Southern Africa. Shara, thanks so much for being my guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarah Kanoy, RN and community health nurse and educator for East Africa for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Sarah, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
If you're interested in becoming a missionary or serving on a Mercy medical team, you can find out more at lcms.org. To find out about Mercy teams, lcms.org/mercyteams.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.